Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hello, this is The Ruck from The Times and The Sunday Times, and coming up today, we've got a packed episode, as always. More Premiership madness as the playoff race had further twists and turns, more controversy as well at the stoop. The second round of the Women's Six Nations took place, England winning as usual, but it's fiercely competitive elsewhere. And we're coming up to the knockout rounds of the Champions Cup, the last 16 this weekend. I'm going to be chatting to Northampton's Lewis Ludlam as they get ready to face Munster. I'm Alfie Reynolds. Welcome back. And this week on the podcast, I'm joined by Elgan Alderman. How are you, Elgan?
Very well, thank you, Alfie. How are you?
I'm not too bad, thanks. How was the last time we spoke to you? You were about to embark on your annual trip around France doing, what was it, 4 games in 3 days or whatever it was? How was that?
Yeah, it was excellent. So we started off with Albi versus Chambéry and National on the Friday night, but then the highlight was undoubtedly the day we spent as Bayonnais Ultra in Bayonne for their 13-12 victory over La Rochelle, unbeaten at the Stade Jean d'Auger. In typical fashion, they lost on Sunday at home, although it was in San Sebastian rather than at the Stade Jean d'Auger. So for the second season in a row, they haven't lost in the league at the Jean d'Auger, but have lost the home game in San Sebastian. So even if it's nominally a home game, they only ever win when they're playing in Bayonne itself. So they are just, you know, in the cliched way, the most French of clubs still out there, Bayonne. And then Sunday night, we were at Bordeaux Toulouse at a sellout 42,000 Mamu Atlantique, which was a stellar occasion. We had Antoine Dupont playing fly half for 76 minutes. We had the entire Bordeaux backline that we thought were going to thrill for France in this year's Six Nations, but didn't quite thrill in the manner we expected. But that ended 31-28 to Bordeaux. That was an absolutely cracking occasion as well. So already looking forward to next year's.
And you got picked up by the television cameras as well, didn't you? From the brief clip you sent me on WhatsApp?
Yes, we obviously didn't realise it at the time, but we got a message from someone who'd been watching the game on Viaplay back in the UK that we were picked up heartily singing Peña Bayona before the match, just thrusting a Bayonne match ball in the air and wearing the sky blue and white colours of Bayonne, because a club director had heard that there were 5 Brits in Bayonne for a rugby game singing Peña Bayona in the middle of town, and just decided to take us to the club shop and give us some stash for free, which was not what we were expecting at all. But that's the type of welcome you get in Bayonne.
Seriously, how'd they track you down?
So our friendship in Bayonne comes through music. I had messaged someone that had been involved with a group called Ontuac, that is a well-known Bayonne rugby singing folk group that released quite a lot of songs about 20 years ago. Through that cold email I sent to them, we ended up striking up a link with a man called Fifi, who's a former Bayonne rugby player, a member of Ontuac. He is essentially the Duke de Bayonne. He just knows everyone in Bayonne, and the mayor walks past and says hi to him. So he's that type of character around Bayonne. And just through that relationship, we've ended up spending, you know, match days with him before the games, and he'll bring along some of the other, you know, old boys of Bayonne, former players, and occasionally, you know, big wigs like directors will rock up. And just so happened that one of the directors happened to be there. We said hi to him, a few quick words. didn't think anything of it. And then he obviously heard us belting out Peña Bayona and Hegowak, the other Basque song that they play after victories in the ground. And he just went, right, you four, come with me. And we didn't know where we were going. And then suddenly we were walking out of the club shop wearing a Bayon top, a beret, carrying a match ball and with a blue and white foulard neckerchief around our necks. So it wasn't what we were expecting, that's for sure.
Well, that is a rugby weekend to make anyone jealous. Mark Palmer is also with us this week. Mark, I'm not sure anything can live up to that about what you've got up to over the last few weekends.
I was just about to tell you all about my Easter Sunday trip to Livingston, but I'm not sure that's going to compare, frankly. But no, it sounds like a magnificent trip that Elgin's been on. But much jealousy in these quarters.
Yeah, okay. Well, exactly the same here. But Livingston, tell me, before we start recording, what's the nickname of the Livingston? So you're at Livingston Celtic on Sunday, which we won't get much talk up on this podcast, understandably. But what's the nickname of their stadium?
Well, it's the Tony Macaroni Arena, so colloquially known as the Spaghetti Ad, which I think it's one of the better nicknames, isn't it? So, yeah, I think that's very worthy. If we're going to go into the round ball game here, I think that's a worthy addition.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. That's a good little nickname. Well, as I said in the intro, we've got loads to try and pack into this week's podcast. So we'll touch upon the Premiership, Women's Six Nations, preview the Champions Cup as well. And as I say, I'm going to be chatting to Northampton's Lewis Ludlam. They got back to winning ways against Saracens on Friday night and they face Munster in the last 16 of the Champions Cup this coming weekend. So looking forward to that. Just quickly though, Mark, the URC you were also covering over the weekend, not a competition that we probably cover as often or as regularly as we might like on the pod, but it's all shaping up quite nicely there as well. I suppose, first of all, from the Scottish perspective, it's pretty much a season of very contrasting fortunes, isn't it? Glasgow going well, Edinburgh less so, and that was the case at the weekend just gone.
Yeah, it had been the case that both had been chugging along quite nicely, but now there's a sort of clear pull away from Glasgow, who are now up to second in the table, having won 45-3 in Glenethley. Edinburgh have lost twice and played pretty poorly on both occasions on their little South African mini-tour, so they've now dropped out of the top eight playoff zone. So a few concerns there. But again, much like the Premiership top 14, it's massively congested there. If you go from, I think, Stormers in fifth place down to Connaught and the Lions 10th and 11th, I think there's 5 points between them. So a massively exciting end to the season coming up there. But as usual, it looks to be Leinster's to lose. They had a very significant and convincing win over the Bulls on Friday night, who had been in second place. So they look very much the team to beat again.
Yeah, I was going to mention the playoff race. So you think from Stormers down to the Lions? I was thinking possibly from Benetton down. Do you think it's still unsure whether the Stormers get in?
Again, you'd be seriously surprised if they didn't. You know, they in their two seasons in the competition, they've won it and been to the final, and they always pick up the pace at this time of year and appear to be doing so again, despite surviving a bit of a scare from Ulster at the weekend there. So, yeah, they'll be fine. Benetton have kind of had a sticky patch after an excellent start to the season, but won at the weekend. So, again, I'd imagine they would probably be fine. But if you're kind of Ulster, Edinburgh, Connaught, Lions, it's still right in the mix.
Yeah, well, from one intriguing playoff race in the URC to in the Premiership as well, where once again, and we spoke about this on last week's podcast, we will probably be speaking about it every single weekend until the end of the season, because once again, we've had a set of results which has just congested the whole thing. It's quite extraordinary. So looking at the table now, after the weekend just gone, between Bath in second and Sale in eighth, everyone has won eight and lost six. The teams had merely separated on the bonus points they have picked up. It is a fascinating division this year. Elgin, I'll maybe come to you first on this one. One of the things I found really interesting this week in the Premiership was that so many of the sides who did well last week struggled this week. So Friday night, Saracens were brilliant against Harlequins the week before. They get beaten by Northampton. Harlequins, who, as I say, were comfortably beaten by Saracens, they beat Bath at home. Sale came back after losing to Bath. They had a comfortable victory against Exeter. And it just, as I say, it just congests the whole thing.
Yeah, that Six Nations break is likely to be contributing to that, because teams are essentially starting all over again, aren't they? They had a few friendlies and whatnot during the Six Nations, but they were coming back in. and just getting back into the swing of things again. So yeah, I mean, you look at that Northampton Saracens game on Friday night, for them to have turned it around in such fashion, and then, you know, for the other team to then see Saracens looking like they're going to get nothing out of the game and then scoring two tries in the last 3 minutes. So they're picking up a crucial bonus point. Bath looking at 43 down and then ending up 40-36. So then suddenly they're getting a point out of a game that they thought they weren't getting anything out of, or rather 2 points in their case. So you do get the examples not only of teams just suddenly turning it around week on week, but also everyone scrapping for these one and two little points, which will make such a big difference when it comes down to it.
Mark, let me come to you for your kind of URC hat on here, I suppose. What do you make of the Premiership run? It's obviously incredibly exciting. Can we draw any conclusions for the fact that we have, as I say, second down to eighth, everyone on the same amount of wins and the same amount of defeats, and what it means for a very competitive league, but the standard of the league overall?
I think it's brilliant, and probably a consequence of, or one of the consequences and one of the positive things about having fewer teams in there is that it lends itself to this kind of congestion and these kind of scenarios. And, you know, there really does seem to be a real levelling of ability of output there in the last couple of seasons. And, you know, you're genuinely going into every weekend now looking at the fixture list going, you know, you wouldn't be surprised by any kind of outcome, which, you know, was not the case in previous years. There was always much more of a defined pattern to who would be the real kind of pace setters and otherwise. So, you know, looking from the outside, it's exciting, and, you know, everything you would want at this stage of a season.
Yeah, Elgin, I was trying to look at the results this weekend and look at the fact that, as I mentioned, there was a swing from the week before. Teams that struggled then got some really big wins, and try and work out why that might be. Home advantage could be one thing, in that Northampton, Harlequin, Sale were all at home this week, but I just feel like it's probably more than that, but I can't quite put my finger on what it is and whether it's because those teams needed some sort of reaction.
We'll have to see what the next Premiership week has in store for us. Again, there's another 2 week gap now because of Champions Cup, so who knows, that they're sort of starting all over again after this little 2 week portion. So yeah, no, I mean, it's set up very nicely for the end of the season, and we'll just have to wait and see which are the teams that do end up in that top four.
Let's get into some of the games. I suppose Harlequins Bath is a good place to start. So I was at the Stoop for this, and when Harlequins were 40 points to 3 up early on in the second half, the game looked absolutely dead and buried. And I think it's probably quite a good reflection of this Quinn side, in that we know how dangerous, how good they can be. It was a beautiful spring day. The underfoot is getting better for the style of rugby that you suspect they would like to play. And at times they were brilliant, and then they went completely off the boil, whether it was a loss of focus or complacency, whatever it was, in the final kind of half an hour of the game for Bath to come back into it. And actually, one of my big takeaways from a Bath perspective was, I think there's a steel to this Bath team that we haven't previously seen. I've covered plenty of Bath games over the years where they've got a great team on paper, but they'd have tough away days or games you feel they could or should get something out of, and they weren't able to do that. I think the fact that they were able to get two bonus points is massive because of how important bonus points clearly are at the moment. That's the reason that they're second in the table, because they've picked up 12 in total this year. But also, I don't know, just a mentality shift, maybe, Elgin, from previous Bath teams. This is a side that are a bit tougher. Johan van Graan, one of the first things he said was kind of, well, we're pleased with the two bonus points and how we came back into it, but that's not good enough. Those aren't the standards that we expect of ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as a coach, you don't want your team to be figuring out how to play on that on any given occasion when you are 43 down. I mean, Mark and I witnessed that during the Six Nations at Wales-Scotland when Scotland were 27-0 up, and then suddenly Wales started playing. It's as nice as it is to have these sort of glorious defeats where you go down swinging hard at the end, ideally you would just be starting well from the top. But yeah, I mean, to score those 33 unanswered points, and obviously there was a bit of controversy at the end of that game, which I'm sure we'll get into, which sort of overshadowed the aftermath of what Bath had done in that match with the 7 minute yellow card for Erne Herbst, which took most of the column inches afterwards in the end.
Yeah, well, should we get into that then? So this was extraordinary. I'll be honest. So I was doing commentary on this game, and I saw Herbst come back on, and in my mind I was thinking, that seems a little bit early. But I'll be honest, I just kind of trusted in the fact that whoever's job it was to keep the time for the yellow cards are reliable to do their job, and it must be time for him to come back on. It was only after the game that we became aware that it was something that Bath had raised with the officials and it was an issue there. I mean, Mark, what's been your read on it? Like, it's, I think it's extraordinary, particularly given the fact that it's a week after we had the TMO in the Saracens Quins game appear to not check something because he heard the commentary.
Absolutely, and I think that that's probably the, you know, caused it to blow up even more in the public domain, is that the fact that these two incidents have come back to back, where they appear to be very much fundamentals of those respective roles. You know, the job there is to keep track of timings, and it just simply hasn't been done. We all, having covered these games, know that you can get lost in the maelstrom of, especially in a game like that, with points going in left, right, and centre, a raft of substitutions, then, you know, add cards to that mix. But fundamentally, that is somebody's responsibility to keep in track of a 10-minute chunk of time, and it appears that it hasn't been carried out. So you can understand, particularly when that individual makes a significant tackle, significant contribution late in the game, that you can understand why Bath would be so peeved, and, you know, the rest of us are left looking for an explanation for something that, you know, quite simply shouldn't have happened.
Yeah, and I think the explanation is maybe something that we're still waiting on, I feel anyway. This is the statement that got released on Sunday by the RFU. It said, the RFU professional game match officials team acknowledge and apologise for an error during the Gallagher Premiership match between Harlequins and Bath, where a yellow card sanction resulted in Erne Herbst returning to the pitch approximately 3 minutes too soon. We'd like to apologise to both teams. As is usual, the process, we will review all the games and ensure continued improvements and learnings. The result of the match remains final. Now, whilst it might frustrate Bath fans, I think we all expected the result to stand. I'm not sure what more they could have done in terms of fixture congestion and various other things. But I don't know, Mark, it's just, I feel like we haven't got an explanation there. Like, there hasn't been an explanation of, so how did that happen? Whose responsibility was it? What broke down and what went wrong?
Exactly, and I think from a communications point of view, that there's a real onus on the authorities there to actually to give that explanation, because it feels like, you know, you say, oh, well, oh, sorry, got that wrong, and then, you know, the Bath potentially left to pick up the pieces of, you know, imagine they missed out on the playoffs by a point, 2 points, whatever it turned out to be. They'll be, you know, it's not too difficult to imagine what the reaction might be at that stage. So, you know, it feels sometimes that it's a bit easy for people in charge to just kind of close rank and say, yeah, even when they do acknowledge a mistake, it's important to explain why and show why it's not going to happen again, because you've put in place, you know, the appropriate processes to ensure that. But at the moment, it kind of feels that they've still left that door a bit open.
Yeah, and maybe off the back of the World Cup, everything we saw last week, this weekend again, where it's a talking point, it seems like there's a lot of discussions in the game at the moment about officiating and kind of how that process works, I suppose. I'm not a big fan of piling onto officials and micro-analysing all the different decisions. There seems to be a wider frustration, which I think was the point that Alex and Will were making on last week's podcast in regards to the TMO, of there's this feeling the TMO gets too involved. And I think, again, this weekend, the feeling might be that the processes aren't working as effectively as they should be, regardless of the individual incident.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I was receiving messages from one friend who happens to be a Bath fan who was talking about it, and even he was ready to admit that he might have been, you know, seeing it very much through the Bath prism of them being undone by the error. But prior to that, you know, we'd been discussing a bit about referees, and I just made the point that for me, yeah, I think general criticism of you know, people saying that the refereeing is as bad as it's ever been or whatever, I think that's why the mark. I think actually, you know, the refereeing of games is not too bad. It's just these, yes, as you say, these slight errors involving the TMO that seem like very simple things. You know, it's so difficult to ref a breakdown when you've got people piling in or people being offside in the defensive line, but you'd hope that people would be able to time 10 minutes properly on the side of the field and the player to come back on. So, yeah, no, I agree. I don't want to and wouldn't want to see pylons against referees, and because, like I say, I think that the doing a very difficult job. They do it quite well generally, but yes, there is some disquiet about the role of the TMO and whether we've got that quite right at the moment.
Let's move on to some of the other games then. Sale with a big, big win against Exeter. Important win for Sale, which keeps them in touching distance. So they're eighth. They are that side at the bottom of the rungs. I mean, simply because they've picked up 5 bonus points. So despite the fact they've won and lost the same amount of games as Bath, Bath have picked up 12 bonus points. And you do wonder, and it's been a bit of a narrative around Sale for a little while. In fact, the game at Gloucester just before the Six Nations, Elgin, that me and you were both at, I remember I was chatting to Alex Sanderson after about the lack of bonus points for Sale and how pivotal that could be. But a big win for them. One of the interesting things I think from this game, Elgin, from an Exeter perspective, is I just wonder whether we saw the inexperience in this Exeter team, maybe. We've all spoken about it this year, haven't we? Exeter 2.0, bringing new players through. They've lost a lot of long-term servants of that club. And it is a fairly youthful side who've done really, really well this year. But just the manner of the defeat, and actually the fact that Exeter are a side who have one of the worst away records in the Premiership this season probably speaks to it as well. Do you just think there are times where there's young players that just have to learn their straps? And that was maybe the case with a tough trip up to the AJ Bell on Sunday for Exeter.
Yeah, I mean, Rob Baxter essentially said as much. He said, you know, when you've got a young side like this, that there are going to be days where it just simply doesn't click. And there were times during the match when, you know, when TNT went to speak to him, where he did seem very exasperated by the performance, and he did almost rank it as among one of the most dispiriting performances he's had for quite a few years as Exeter's director of rugby. Again, I think that the start of the rebuild at the start of the season was perhaps almost too good. They almost front loaded a lot of the positive performances to the point where you might have expected more 41-5s at the start and then some thrilling wins later on. But this young team, you know, with David Jenkins as captain and plenty of players around a similar age as him, like Ross Vincent, Chris Chunza coming back for his first game since his injury after the World Cup, Emmanuel Faye-Wobosso as well on the wing. So many of these players that are the most exciting crop of players in their nations. But yes, they are still there or thereabouts. There is so much talent there. And you think if anyone can get this Exeter side back on track after quite a humbling 36-point defeat like that, then, you know, Rob Baxter's seen plenty of things before, seen plenty of players come through. There's still so much promise and talent there.
Well, coming up later in the pod, when I chat to Lewis Ludlam, we'll speak a bit more about Northampton's victory over Saracens. Important one for them, given what happened at Ashton Gate against Bristol the Friday night before that. Good bonus point win against the defending champions. The final team I did just want to mention before we move on to chatting about the Women's Six Nations was actually Newcastle. I know they lost on Friday night to Leicester, and it has been a tough old season for fans up in the Northeast. They've lost all 14 games. But I just feel like they're going to have a say in things, in terms of, it feels for the first time in a while, Steve Diamond coming in, that they're heading in the right direction. They felt a little bit aimless and rudderless earlier on this season. And I feel like they're getting closer to a result. And I feel like they will get a result before the end of the season. And who they get a result against, given I think they've got Sale, Bath, Bristol, Gloucester as their remaining fixtures. One of those teams, it could well be the Banana Skin, that is a real blow to their playoff hopes. I feel like that is a real possibility. But we'll leave the Premiership chat there for now. As I say, a bit more on Northampton coming up later in the pod. Up next, though, we'll get stuck into the second round of the Women's Six Nations. So, Women's Six Nations, Elgin was at Ashton Gate for England's comfortable victory over Wales. Mark, you were keeping an eye on how Scotland were getting on against France, losing in the end 15-5, a result that only got put to bed with basically the final play of the game. But, I mean, they lost 55-0 last year to France, wasn't it, Mark? Is this a sign of really significant steps forward for this Scottish side?
I think it has to be, and they went into that game, as we know, on the back of the country's best ever winning run. It was 7 matches, one of which was on the opening weekend in Cardiff. And as you say, having been absolutely smacked last year in Van, and that's been the pattern of the fixture all the way back to 2010, bar one draw in there a couple of years back, that, you know, this is a game that Scotland have always lost very heavily, and they were right in it to the last play, and probably will feel that it was their own inaccuracies that kind of cost them in the end. end. They just couldn't get, when the game was in the balance, they just couldn't get into the French 22. They had a couple of poor kicking instances, which both from hand and the tee, which had been actually a major strength of theirs in the win down in Cardiff. So, you know, just at the crucial moments, their accuracy failed them. But to be within 10 points, I think probably counts as a, you know, it's still a significant result and a milestone in this team's progress.
Yeah, is it a missed opportunity though for them?
It has to be, yeah. And I think that was very much the tenor of the post-match comments, that, you know, they're not content just to be competing, even though we're saying that that's a major step forward. They don't want to be there. Nobody wants to be a gallant loser. So, you know, I think there has to be a recognition that, you know, the Poyengo next, which again, you'd imagine is not, you know, they're just a class above everyone else at the moment. But they then go to Ireland, where if they finished off, say, with a 3-win Six Nations, it would be a fantastic achievement. But also, third place would get them an automatic qualification for the next World Cup. So there's probably more substantial things on the line than was the case at the weekend. End in a narrow defeat. So it's still every chance to turn this into a really, really significant campaign.
Yeah, and just with France so far, expected to be the closest challengers to England. But they're starting, I feel, to become a sense of they're not quite hitting the heights that we've seen previously.
No, they were a bit ragged at times at Hive Stadium at the weekend. They just, again, much like the men's team, at their best, they have that brilliant amalgam of, you know, power, pace, and the more sort of expansive touches. But, you know, those three elements were there, but only in flashes, and they didn't really sort of bring them together in concert at any stage. So, again, we do like to think that they will be the nearest challengers to England, but nothing that they've pulled up quite so far suggests that they're certainly not in a position to be trying to take that crown. So, really not quite hit their straps yet.
Well, we'll see how they get on. You suspect that big game against England coming up later in the championship is going to be a crucial one. Speaking of England, though, Elgin at Ashton Gate, record attendance for a Red Roses game away from Twickenham. Great occasion. What about the actual match itself, Elgin? I was quite interested, actually, in your match report in the line near the start of it, where you said the past four meetings between the sides had ended in 50 plus margins of victory for England. So a 36 point reverse is progress of sorts. It's kind of where we are, isn't it, with judging the other nations against England?
Yeah, absolutely. I think if Wales had beaten Scotland in that first round and then lost by 36 to England, you'd regard that as a crack, as a really good start to the tournament by Wales. But I think just the fact that they did lose that first game to Scotland at home, you know, the bare minimum requirement for Wales really was finishing third. And there was a bit of feeling that they could even possibly challenge France to finish second in this year's tournament. So that first defeat, which really was crushing for those Blues, it just does mean that it takes some of the gloss off that narrowing of the margin of defeat against England. You know, England and Wales at Ashton Gate on Saturday, both teams had, I think, almost identical number of minutes in attack. So there were plenty of opportunities for Wales. It was just clear that England were just far more potent when it came to making line breaks and finishing off moves. You know, Wales would go through lots of phases and get near, but then just get turned over because they didn't quite have that same power and speed and skill that England have. Whereas, you know, there was a prime example when Megan Jones just burst out of her own 22 with a lovely sidestep, and then 80 metres and about a minute later, England go over in the corner. So there was just a clear difference still in the ability to just break a game open between the two teams. You know, with England, this is their first tournament under John Mitchell, so they're going through changes as well. They're looking to make their game more exciting, more all court. And we did see that in the start of the game. They clearly had no designs on kicking the ball out of their 22. England were really trying to run everything from the start, and they did temper that slightly.
Yeah, is that a real focus, Elgin? Sorry to jump in. With the John Mitchell England era up and running, it seems like after a couple of games, a more all court, more expansive attacking game seems to be something that they're really working on.
Yeah, absolutely. They want a game plan for all sorts. I think when we talk about this, when we talk about the strength of them all, which in that 30-game unbeaten run, that run to the World Cup final, was very much their strength. I think people did overplay to an extent how not good at other aspects of the game England were. They were clearly very good at a lot of things, but it is very much an intent of theirs to be able to play thrilling, exciting rugby, to run it from 90 metres out, which they did on occasion. And I think the phrase John Mitchell and Marley Packer used after the game was one shot, one kill. You know, if we get a chance anywhere on the field, we just want to score straight away. And we did see them do that. I think they scored from essentially their first or second attacking phase of the match after Wales had huffed and puffed through 6 minutes and got a penalty out of it. England just marched upfield and scored straight away.
And you mentioned it there previously in terms of Wales and where they are. Are we still waiting, do you think, to see the real benefits of professionalism for Wales? I think it's 3 years now. Or is that a little bit unfair?
I do think that that opening defeat by Scotland was a real blow, because Wales had finished third in the past two tournaments. Okay, 2 years ago, they were it was done on points because they'd only won two games. But then last year, they won three out of five. They were clearly the best of the rest behind England and France. And so the thing that was on the menu this year was that they win three games again and they narrow the margin to England and France, and possibly, as I've said, against France, possibly beat them. Because as we've seen, France are, to follow that old cliche that they used to say of the men, you know, you never know which France side is going to turn up. We saw that WXV, they beat New Zealand, they lost to Australia. So France could still be there for the taking. But yes, I do think the tenor of a 36-point defeat by England is less positive, given that they were unable to beat Scotland last week. And that is slightly a step back. Even if the performances have not necessarily been worse in terms of results, it is a step back on 12 months ago.
Can you explain to me what was happening with Abby Dow and Holly Aitchison's kicking? I want to know more about this.
So during the year, obviously, England scored eight tries, so we had plenty of opportunities to watch Holly Aitchison kick conversions. And after about two or three, it just dawned on me that Abby Dow was just standing there, almost talking to her while she was kicking. And at first we thought, okay, is she there in case it's a bit windy and Holly Aitchison needs someone to hold the ball in place? But that never happened. It didn't seem windy enough for that to happen. And we did ask John Mitchell afterwards, and he did say, oh, it's just in case, yeah, in case the ball fell off and someone needed to hold it in position. But it did very much look like Abby Dow was acting like a golf caddy almost, because she did seem to be talking to Holly Aitchison during the kicks. And goal kicking was a topic of concern after the 48-0 win over Italy, because there had been quite a few misses. So even though we don't have an answer yet, we did suspect in the watching on from the stands in Bristol that perhaps it was some kind of technique that Holly Aitchison has come up with to try and improve the goal kicking and to get a sense of focus, maybe take her mind off things. We weren't sure, but Abby Dow did seem to be giving almost a caddy-like pep talk during the preparations for the conversions.
We need to get to the bottom of that. So they've just batted it away so far. That fascinates me. I love the idea of that. Let's get on to the final game of the weekend. Ireland 21, Italy 27. Mark, you know, when it's Italian rugby, I'm coming to you first on this one. Big victory for the Italians, this one. As big a victory for Italy as disappointing as it is for Ireland.
Yeah, it was a fantastic result for Italy. Their first ever win on Irish soil. So you can imagine how well that has gone down back home. They established a big early lead, did toy with throwing it away. It was quite a ding-dong contest there, but they held through in the end. There's some excellent individual performances. The hooker, Vicchini, got player of the match on the back of a couple of tries and just some excellent work in the loose. And Beatrice Rigoni, who's been such a key figure in their rise, and also with Sale now, another terrific display. Again, as with everything else in Italian rugby, there's been a real sense of momentum building around this side. Much like Scotland, they've kind of belatedly come round to putting some real investment behind it. The women's game, there's now professional teams attached to the two franchises at Benetton and Zebre. Just a feeling that it's gone beyond lip service to something more substantial. And, you know, this result will certainly cement that impression. This is a team that means business.
As I say, disappointment for Ireland. You feel like this is maybe their best opportunity for a win. But I don't know, how do we balance it with Ireland? I think clearly improving. We saw that last weekend with them being more competitive than we expected. But also the disappointment that you feel they would have viewed this game as their opportunity to get a victory.
Absolutely, and I think it bears out what Elgin was saying about the disappointment in Wales after failing to beat Scotland, is that outside of England and France, the other teams do genuinely feel that they can knock off each other, you know, whenever those heads-to-heads come up. So, you know, with Scotland still to go to Dublin, you suspect that Ireland will look at that one as a very winnable game as well. So, you know, they're always perhaps not all not a lot lost. And, you know, there's also the, much like there was in Edinburgh at the weekend, there was a record crowd for a women's game in Dublin. So, you know, these kind of contextual things have to be acknowledged as well. And you know, they are real positives. But yeah, you can only be disappointed to have ended up on the wrong side of the scoreline, despite the fact, though, that, you know, they did well to fight back into it, having been, you know, 22-7 down at one stage. So a missed opportunity, but always not yet lost in terms of their campaign as a whole.
And as for Italy, they got one win last year, now really targeting that second victory.
Absolutely. And, you know, they will feel that there's a bit of momentum behind them now. Decent performance first weekend, a win here. Going back to Italy to play the you know, in the remaining fixtures, with again, it's expected to be a full house in Parma. It's a real opportunity for them to go one better than they have in the last couple of years.
Well, fascinating. A rest week now for the women's Six Nations. But we will start casting our eyes forward next, because it's the last 16 of the Champions Cup coming up this weekend. So I'm going to be previewing those games with Mark and Elgin, the other side of my chat with the Northampton Saints back row, Lewis Ludlam.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with Host Red sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book Host Red sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
Well, Lewis, really appreciate your time. Great to get you back on the podcast. Firstly, how was your Easter? I guess it's made a hell of a lot better by a big win on Friday night.
Yeah, well, thanks very much for having me. Obviously, the weekend runs a lot smoother when you come off the back of a win. So it was much more enjoyable than last week, in all honesty. So, it was a good performance for us, really. And I think after the result and performance of Bristol, we thought it needed that to get ourselves back on the road, really. What we did say is we don't want to be a team that reacts to bad performances, though. We want to show that level of performance every week, really. So, we were disappointed last week, but quite pleased with the way that Friday came and the way we bounced back.
You always hear sports people say, you know, the difference between a loss and a win and your mood in the weekend and just all that sort of thing. Is it really tangible for you, you know, the difference between winning and losing and your weekend just having a completely different complexion to it?
Yeah, you should ask my girlfriend. I think she's the she's the best gauge on that. I think it depends who you are. You've got some lads who can switch off really, really well to it and park it and look at it for what it is and enjoy the weekend. For me, I struggle to let it go, I think. And I don't think it's until I'm back on the pitch the following week that you actually feel like you've shaken it a little bit. So I think you can deal with losing. I think the manner in which we lost last week, we never really put a game on the pitch. I think it was so frustrating. You think about all week just getting back on the pitch and righting those wrongs. So, depends who you ask, really, I suppose.
Yeah, and an important win as well. I mean, I know against Saracens, but just in terms of this whole race for the playoffs in the Premiership, it's absolutely mad, isn't it? You look at the results over the weekend. I was at the Stoop for the Quinn's Bath game, which was crazy. But the fact that we've got, and we've spoken about it earlier on this podcast with Elgin and Mark, Bath in second, Sale in eighth, they've both won and lost the same amount of games. It's just bonus points separating them.
It is. I think that speaks to the brand of Premiership rugby these days and what it's offering. I think in the past, people have questioned the product. I think now you've got a product where every weekend, any team can beat anyone. And that's so exciting for fans. I think for us, it's we need to try and separate ourselves from the pack a little bit. And it is so close. Like, you end up losing one or two games and you can drop down two or three places in the table. So I think the message for us is just we've got to be consistent with it. We've got to sort of separate ourselves from it and give ourselves a little bit of breathing room because it's so close around the top of the table.
Yeah, I saw Phil Dowson say essentially exactly that after the game on Friday night, is that you don't want to be a team that becomes a yo-yo team, which we've seen, and it's probably not even that disrespectful. I think there are a number of clubs that probably have been that way this year, and you can see that from the amount of their kind of win-loss column. But for you guys, you have been consistent, and it's about just making sure that you're back on it now, you're back on your form.
Exactly. And I think in past seasons, we've definitely been accused of being one of those teams where up and down, and we've always sort of been in games and with the ability to win them, but haven't really had that consistency. And I think that's been the difference this year for us. I put that down to probably our defence has come a long way. That keeps you in games for longer. And our forward pack, I think, as well, has really stepped up this year in a way that they've been able to control games. So, I think that's been the two main positives for us this year. It's just about keeping them going and making sure that we bring the best of ourselves every week from now on.
And just from your point of view personally, how's the last couple of months been? Because it's something that I think we've all had to get used to, the fact that there being no Premiership during the Six Nations, but then also for you not being involved in the Six Nations as you were in previous years. Did you struggle in that time? Was it frustrating? Was it quite nice to give yourself a time to recharge?
Bit of both, in all honesty. I think for rugby in general, I think that period's fantastic. I think it's awesome that players don't have to leave their club to play for country and miss out on Prem games. And for supporters, they get to watch every game with the best players playing. So I think for rugby, it's a brilliant thing. As a player, as someone who's struggled with injury start of the season, it's frustrating because you want to get a run of games, you want to get out there and perform and play and compete. So to have your weekends was a little bit strange, and I think there was a lot of lads who were excited to get back to it. But I think in hindsight, that period to get the body right again and get on top of some niggles and injuries and making sure that you sort of reboot the systems after the first half of season, I think is probably a positive thing as well.
Were you just a fan again for a lot of those England games?
Yeah, I was, and I thought I'd be really gutted watching it. And I think sometimes as a player, when you're not involved, you don't like watching the games. But I know what those boys have been through and the amount of pressure they're getting. So to see them perform in the manner that they did, I think was really pleasing, something I enjoyed as well. And I know they're probably not quite where they want to, but I think they're getting a lot of bad press at the minute. But where that team's come and the way they're developing, and the heart they showed in that Ireland game in particular, hats off to those boys and deserve all the credit they get, really.
Yeah, totally. Let's get on to looking ahead to this weekend for you guys. Munster at home, last 16 of the Champions Cup, repeat of the pool stage game that you played, great victory for you guys away from home. I'd imagine that from a player's perspective, these are just the games you want to be involved in, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's a team full of internationals who are competing at that level for a good fair few years now. So, it's special. I think we're excited that it's at home. I think that would be a great occasion for us, and these are the games you look forward to. International level of competition in a European Cup for trophies in knockout games. It's exciting, and these are ones you want to be involved in, and these are ones you look back on with fond memories.
Yeah, just one player in your team that I wanted to ask you about. And I know this year the squad performance has been brilliant. There's been a number of guys playing brilliant rugby, but it was just Finn Smith, because as a young guy, and I remember watching that game against Munster away and how impressive I thought he was as the fly half, and just how he executed what you guys wanted to do, put you in the right areas of the field. And again, I think we saw a really mature performance from him against Saracens on Friday night. I was just wondering if you could give a bit of an insight into what he's like, and also just the maturity of him for such a young player.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's matured brilliantly in the last, really noticeably in the last 7-8 months, I'd say. Last season, he came in full of energy and full of excitement and wanting to play. But I think this year, the side of his game he's developed is that control, his ability to put us in the right areas of the pitch, his decision-making and when to play, when not to. And I think what people don't see is his ability to lead a team off the pitch as well in training week and be on top of standards, I think has been unbelievable. So, it's so impressive for a young player like that to come in with the maturity he has and develop so quickly. And he's been, he's been fantastic for us.
Has he gone from the excitable youngster to more of a leader in the dressing room?
Yeah, to be fair, I think being away with 40 in the Six Nations, he's come back in and his rugby knowledge, it seems like he's aged another 10 years. But yeah, he's been brilliant. And he's still off the pitch, an excitable little teenager. But as soon as we cross the white line, he's business hat on and he knows how to lead the team.
Yeah, he's been getting the job done. Just a couple more for you, Lewis. Just, I suppose, looking ahead to this weekend, and then it's also looking at the Premiership as well, the fact that you are a team fighting on two fronts. There's actually a lot of the Premiership teams. I mean, Sarries, Quins, Leicester, Sale, Bath, Exeter, they've all got last 16 ties this weekend. I was just wondering if that brings with it a certain challenge, or actually it's a good thing, the fact that you guys don't have as long a break as some other sides in the Premiership that you get to keep playing.
Yeah, I think for us as a team, momentum is massive. And I think after a performance on Friday, if we were to go in a week off, I don't think it would have been a good thing for us. The fact we get to get straight back out there in another big game to hopefully carry some momentum on, I think is a really positive thing for this team. So, I like playing games. I think there's some players who like to put their feet up. I think the majority of the team would want to get out there, and especially a game like this. I think it's fantastic, and yeah, less time off, more games, I say.
Yeah, no, quite right. And just finally, I know, I suppose emotional goodbye for you at the end of this season. I know you've kind of spoken about that already, but I was just wondering for you, as we approach all of a sudden, it gets this part of the year and we're looking towards the end of the season and you're in the playoff race in the Premiership, you're in the Champions Cup. Is there any sort of, I don't know, the kind of last dance feel for you this season, and how big a motivation would be ending your Saints career with a bit of silverware at the end of it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's been the motivation every single year since I've been playing at the club, and always been desperate. I think the fact that it is literally last chance for me to win silverware at my childhood club is everything, really. I said to my dad the other day, I remember being in the stands in 2014 when they won it, as a supporter, and since that moment being desperate for a part of it, to be a part of the club's history. And now I've got probably the best chance since I've been here in the position we are to go out and win silverware. Knowing it's your last chance, it just makes you even more desperate, really, for it. So, it's definitely a last chance feel, especially with a few big names leaving this season, in Courtney and Alex Waller and Ethan Waller and a couple of other big members of that squad. It does have that feel, and I think it's something we've got to thrive off, really.
Well, wish you all the very best for this weekend and for the remainder of the season. And thanks again, Lewis, for giving us your time on the pod. It's always great to get you on, so thank you.
No problem. No, thanks very much for having me.
So great to chat to Lewis Ludlam. back up and running in the Premiership. Big victory against Saracens on Friday night. And a really intriguing home game against Munster. A repeat of their match in the pool stages where they went and did the job at Thomond Park. So we will wait and see what happens this weekend. But Mark Elgan, that is one of a number, I think, of games on paper that are really exciting. So just to do the admin and run through the games: Harlequins Glasgow, Bulls Lyon, Stormers La Rochelle, Exeter Bath, Bordeaux Begler Saracens, Leinster Leicester, Northampton Munster and Toulouse Racing 92 are the last 16 ties. Mark, what of those games jumps out to you? What excites you the most?
I mean, what a menu. I mean, you know, eight absolutely cracking ties there. You know, pick any one of them as potentially being the tie of the round, I think. But I'm off to the stoop on Friday night for the first one, Quins against Glasgow, which I think is probably, you know, symptomatic of that card, that you probably wouldn't be surprised by any outcome there. Two teams that like to play a certain style. Quins conceding a lot of points at the moment, Glasgow scoring a lot of points. So, you know, is it the irresistible force meets the very movable object? We shall see. But again, I think it's one of those weekends where you'd happily just park up in front of the TV for the duration. It's some phenomenal entertainment ahead.
Yeah, you mentioned Northampton Munster being a repeat. I think it's one of three repeats of pool games, which I'll add in. While that is slightly boring that we see the same teams play against each other as well, it does add that extra layer of one team trying to avenge a defeat perhaps previously. And I think Bordeaux Saracens is probably the one that jumps out of me the most, having been at Bordeaux on the weekend and seen the adverts for that game looming large around the ground. You know, Bordeaux beat them 55-15 in January. That's a real shellacking for Saracens to have suffered. And that thrilling Bordeaux backline that is just absolutely brilliant to watch. So I think that on Saturday evening will be one to look at. Also, keeping the French hat on, Toulouse Racing 92 on Sunday, maybe obviously not as much English interest, but Toulouse have got Romain Antemac back, who came on at the weekend in their match against Pau. And Toulouse have had Antoine Dupont playing at fly half for most of the last two matches as well. So that's always fun to see as well.
Yeah, I think it's four repeated games from the pool stages.
I've not done enough research. I've stopped at three, clearly. That's bad.
Well, that is never something I think that could be levelled at you, Elgin. But I think Bulls Lyon, Stormers La Rochelle, Bordeaux Saracens and Northampton Munster are the repeated games. Well, I was going to ask you both about that, because I remember when this draw happened and when we got to the end of the pool stages and we looked at those games and it was kind of like, how many games have we already seen in the competition? Do you think actually that matters less now because enough time has passed? It feels fresh again to me.
It does, and I think that's the key point, that if the feels there's been a clean break from the pool stage. I mean, it feels so long ago, you know, pre-Six Nations, and it's almost another lifetime. So this to me just looks like a fantastic menu of great ties, and I don't think they'll be overly coloured by what's gone before them.
Yeah, and I mean, there's just narratives all over the place. We could go in any direction. I wanted to ask you about Glasgow, Mark, because I presumed that you would be there. That's one of those ties, isn't it, where I think for Glasgow, they will view that as very winnable, but then that will be exactly the same for Quins as well. Like, for both of those teams, this is a great opportunity to get themselves to a Champions Cup quarterfinal.
Big time. And, you know, Glasgow last year reached the Challenge Cup final, which was the first time they'd won knockout games in European competition. And, they then were comfortably put away by a very good Toulon side in Dublin. So I think there's a sense that they feel that they'd started out how to win these games and compete in these, or to work out how to win these games and certainly compete in them, and then let themselves down badly that day. So there's definitely a feeling of wanting to put that right by, you know, on a European stage, against a team, as I say, that it's that kind of matchup of styles that really intrigues me, that both will look to play a certain way, albeit Glasgow have also shown a much sturdier defensive resilience this year, which perhaps has been beyond Quinn since that Six Nations break. So again, yeah, both teams will fancy their chances of winning that one. And then it's the reward of, I think it's Saris or Bordeaux in the next round, which it certainly won't get any easier for either of them. But it's a tantalising prospect.
Yeah, totally. The one game I will say, and Leicester can plaster this over the dressing room, I think the Leinster-Leicester game is the only game out of all of those that people will look at. And I think all of us will expect Leinster to get through.
Yeah, I mean, it's a clash of kind of, you know, certainly historically European heavyweights, but at the moment, yeah, that Leinster machine back up and running in grand style post Six Nations with their big win over the Bulls, you can't see anything other than potentially even a comfortable home win there. So, famous last words.
Yeah, no, I was thinking that it's one of those, isn't it? Because I remember before the England-Ireland game in the Six Nations, I was saying, I just can't see how England beat them. It's like, oh, okay, you know, strange things happen, but... Yeah, I stand by it that I think when you look at all of those ties, the Leinster-Leicester one, on paper at least, is the one where I think most people will be predicting a Leinster win. We'll have to leave it there. It was always going to be a case of trying to fit as much in as possible this week. But the last 16 of the Champions Cup, packed full of awesome fixtures. Let's hope, I'm sure it will, that it lives up to the billing. We'll get through a couple of emails in just a second, but let's do... God or Goddess of the Week to round off the podcast. Mark Elgin, who wants to go first?
I will go for a god and a goddess combined, which will be Luke Pearce and Cat Roach, referees at the weekend, who both awarded scrums for scrum halves taking more than 5 seconds at the base of a ruck. And we saw the corollary of that, that hurrying up, because Tom James was obviously charged down by Theo McFarland, perhaps... worried about, you know, the prospect of taking too long with Luke Pearce's countdown. So hopefully more of the same, more hurrying and more dodgy box kicks that get charged down in future.
I like that. Give a bit of love to the officials as well. We're getting a bit of criticism at the moment, I think fairly in some regards, as we've touched upon. But yeah, I enjoyed seeing that as well. Mark, who are you going for?
I'm going to go for a friend of the pod, Kyle Rowe, who scored a hat-trick for Glasgow in their win over the big win over Scarlets. Wasn't the three most difficult finishes the wing will ever come up with, but right place, right time to get on the end of some excellent attacking moves. He's somebody who doesn't get spoken about much in the context of some of Scotland's more eye-catching wings with Van der Merwe, Darcy Graham, etc. But somebody who's really kind of excelled in the last couple of years at just doing a lot of the simple things very well, just a very consistent performer, and somebody who'll be again very important when they go down to Harlequins on Friday.
So I was tempted to go for Ollie Slightholm, who I think a lot of the description you've just had for Kyle Rowe there, Mark, you could probably give to Ollie Slightholm as well, in that if when you look at the amount of Premiership wingers and the guys that get the most attention and plaudits, he's not always at the top of that list, but his form this season has been absolutely sensational. He was one of the few bright sparks for Northampton in that defeat to Bristol the other week, scoring a great try. He was on try-scoring form again against Saracens in their victory on the weekend just gone. So I was going to mention him. I want to honourable mention to him. But actually, I will go for a goddess this week and Rachel Malcolm. I know Scotland in defeat, but there have been many times over the last few years where it has been Rachel Malcolm having to front up to the cameras after another disappointing Scotland defeat and that team not quite being able to find its feet or head in the right direction. But it feels like they are. We spoke about it earlier, and I think the Scotland captain has been sensational for them for a long, long time and is starting to reap the rewards of a lot of her hard work. So, yeah, I just wanted to give the nomination this week to Rachel Malcolm. I said I'd get through a few emails as well. The email address for the pod is theruck@thetimes.co.uk. Thank you to Ben Williams, who got in touch, who was emailing in regards to the chat that Alex, myself and Will had last week about the cost of Premiership match tickets. And he just got in touch to say, the question I would ask is whether it's time to revisit the salary cap. In practice, the price increases are inevitable. That's the ticket price increases because clubs have increasing costs themselves and fewer matches in which to cover them. TV deals won't cover the gap. The real question is about costs, therefore, and that means player salaries. Is it time to reset the cap somewhere at a sustainable level, even if that means losing a few more players to France or Japan? Appreciate the email, Ben. Mark and Elgin, I won't ask you both to unpick the finances of domestic rugby right now. Probably don't have time for it. We also got an email in from Mark Bedis, who it's his first time emailing the pod, but he says he's a very long time listener and subscriber. So appreciate that, Mark. He said, just wanted to give a shout out to the entire club at Gloucester Rugby. I took my 11-year-old daughter, who has Down syndrome, to the game at King's Home on Saturday. Despite the fact that we lost the game to a very entertaining Bristol team, the way the club treated her was outstanding. They had a fan zone where she could meet some of the players. Then the stewards allowed her to high-five some of the players coming off at halftime. Then at the full-time whistle, she had selfies with many of the players. We always tend to talk about negatives in the game, as in life in general, but I thought it would be a good opportunity to mention something that Gloucester and probably other teams have done really well, and inclusivity was top of the agenda. Great email there, Mark. Great to hear that. And you're absolutely right. There is often the case that a lot of the talk around the game is quite negative, but I'm incredibly glad that your experience at Kingsholm was such a positive one. So thanks again for emailing in. Mark Elgin, we'll leave it there for this week. Plans for this week, this weekend? Mark, you coming down to London ahead of time, or are you doing some mad trip back and forth in a day?
You know me, I'm driving down on Friday with a carload of colleagues, so at least have some people to hopefully share the load with. And then we are staying overnight this time, but back up on Saturday morning.
Oh, very good. Well, drive safe then. At least you're not doing it all in one day, which I know you've done that sort of thing previously. Elgin, what about you? Where takes you this weekend? Are you Champions Cupping, or is it a different sport for you?
On Sunday, I'll be at Northampton Munster, which is the early kickoff. So looking forward to that at Franklin's Gardens. And on Saturday, I'll be watching them from London Welsh Rugby Clubhouse. We're having a little informal sing-along for the Old Players Day luncheon. So we'll do our usual thing where we just go in and sing a few numbers while they're finishing up their lunch, and then sing by the clubhouse as all the fans and players come over after the game as well. So looking forward to looking forward to stretching the vocal cords once more.
Why is Elgin's weekends always so much more entertaining than ours, Mark?
I know. Needs to ask some questions about our life choices.
Everyone should just sing at rugby games. That's all that people should do on their weekends.
Yeah, that is the running theme, isn't it? Sing at rugby games and you'll be all right. Mark, Elgin, really appreciate you joining me. Great stuff as always. Thank you to listening to this week's episode of The Ruck, the rugby podcast from The Times and The Sunday Times. Many of you will already, but make sure you follow or subscribe wherever you get your podcast from. Get in touch on email, theruck@thetimes.co.uk as well. And we'll see you next week.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com